This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 10th of January, 2022. Looking at a market that was spooked late Friday by the U.S. jobs report, which effectively is beginning to show that the U.S. is at full employment and essentially an overheating economy. We saw, just to recap, plus 200K or 199K, if to be specific, on the non-farm payrolls change. That was versus some figure double that expected. But before we think this is bad news, we have to consider that this, in the context with very high earnings, average early hourly earnings gains, and with the other survey, the household survey, showing that unemployment rate continuing to collapse, it suggests an economy that is at full employment. So people are tough to hire because they're not there to hire, not because there's weak demand for folks to get into the labor force. And then I can't help but wonder, and actually let's get a little specific here on the data point. So 3.9% on the unemployment rate, that's another 0.3% drop from 1 month to the next after the prior month also showed a 0.3% drop. So we're dropping from, let's call it 5-ish percent down to 3.9%. And this on a scale of 4 months or less, it was actually 5.2% 4 months ago, something that took in the cycle prior to the pandemic over 2.5 years to accomplish. So again, we're already back at essentially full employment, and that average hourly earnings number coming in hotter than expected, 0.6%. You can annualize that to, of course, something resembling a 7+%. The Fed is way behind the curve. And you're actually starting to see some analysts, including myself a little bit, looking for potentially a bigger rate hikes than originally expected, not just the number, but even starting at a higher rate. I think it would make sense to go 37.5 basis points, just set the rate immediately to 0.5% in March. But let's see. I think the interesting thing being the market reaction, Peter, and then we're seeing once again on the interest rate side with that pattern and what's going up, what's going down, what's going down more because of the whole curve lifting.
Yeah, but before we go to that, I think you missed an important point of the in terms of the unemployment report in the U.S. and that was the hourly earnings, the inflation on wages or on wages, and that was holding up. I think it was actually revised higher.
I did mention that.
Oh, sorry.
0.6. If you were listening, Peter,
I was sleeping.
That puts the
all right.
But yeah, 0.6. But there is this little tricky bit with the average weekly hours that got bumped a little bit higher in the prior month, which meant
the
earnings looked a little bit lower, but then it bumped back down the hours, which made it look higher again. But still, if you take the 2 months together, it's still 1%, let's call it 1% versus 2 months ago. And that is a fast pace of wage gains. Yes.
In any case, my point was that, maybe I was sleeping, is that it potentially is the reason why the Fed could turn very, very, yes, into panic mode, because we have had these endless discussions about the Phillips curve. It came about in the 1970s, where you had certain circumstances in the labor market in your 60s and 70s that created the Phillips curve. So that inverse relationship between the labor market tightness, the unemployment rate, and wage growth, right? So when you have a low unemployment rate, you have high wage growth, and the Phillips curve has been tossed into the trash bin over the past 15 years or so, or at least after the great financial crisis. And if that relationship suddenly comes into life again because of certain underlying dynamics are suddenly here, then I think it could really spook the Fed. And that is one of the interesting stories. But the other interesting story to follow this year is this whole interest rate rise and the speculative growth pockets. I mean, the valuations that we're seeing in some parts of the equity market is just extraordinary. In other parts, it's just, I would say, fair value relative to what we observe in the discount rate or the US 10-year yield. But if as you can see here on slide two with John's chart on the NASDAQ 100 futures, I mean, if we push higher towards 2%, I think we'll give up more in the NASDAQ 100, and even more so in probably the speculative growth stocks. But with the X factor, the caveat being the earnings season is coming into part, and that's creating all this idiosyncratic risk to specific equities outside, a major theme where the speculative growth stocks are coming down.
Yeah, I guess the key will be how individual names react to what those earnings are. That gives you a sense of the dynamics there. But and then just technically speaking, 10,500 on the sorry, not 10,000,
15,000.
Yeah, 15,500 is that key pivot area that you can see on the chart there. And then further down, the sort of the capitulation zone really starts to pick up below 15,300 with that 61.8% retracement. But I want to bring another thing in here, another, I think, huge question mark in the coming weeks and to a couple of months, and that is the Omicron variant. I think it's raging so fast and hot that it'll, when it peaks, it'll peak very quickly and probably recede very quickly. It seems to be, many are saying, scientists, commentators in the space, and we can hope that this is the case, it stays generally in the nose and does not get into the lungs. It stays in the nose and throat. That's why it's so contagious, but it's less severe if it stays away from the lungs, except in some younger patients. But if that is the case, of course, that could actually, ironically, help on the labor supply front, because as workers are not constantly getting out of the workforce because they're calling in sick, and you have parents that are able to go back to jobs because they're not concerned about their kids' schools constantly getting shut down, that could help on a little bit on the labor supply side of things. But then you have to ask on the services, especially the services demand side of things, that's going to pick up in raging fashion, and we'll see a very strong economy from that source.
I know, Ole, you're sitting there and being very patient with John and I just going on and on rambling about US economics, but I just wanted to actually because I didn't know that you would pull in the Omicron developments, John, but just very quickly look at slide 8, Moderna. It's basically the same chart if you pull out BioNTech. Don't pull up Pfizer, because that's, you know, not pure exposure to vaccines, it's a lot of other things. But if you look at Moderna a share price, I think here you have millions of investors, very sharp institutional investors with very deep knowledge about, you know, the healthcare and biotechnology sector, and they are constantly selling the shares and pushing down the share price. I think this is probably the go-to indicator on whether we will face an endemic stage of this pandemic, because if we reach that, and with the Omicron not, you know, can, you know, touch your lungs and go down in your lungs, then why we don't probably need all these vaccines. And that would be reflected in the cash flows and the valuation of Moderna. So I think this is an expression of what you're basically saying.
So the so-called vaccines for something that is so much more mild would probably switch to some sort of therapeutics rather than a vaccine approach to the disease. Let's stop playing medical officers and talk to Ole about what are you seeing if Omicron clears suddenly. I guess that's going to affect certainly on the crude oil demand front, Ole, but there's also a lot of foot here with this rebalancing of this so-called commodity index. So take us through what's going on in your space.
Yeah, and let's rewind just a little bit further as well, because you talked about the surging yield last week, and that does obviously need to mention the precious metals market in that sense, because we did see a 30 basis point rally in real yields last week. That's really, that normally that should have quite a significant negative impact on gold prices. It didn't. We're still hovering around that 1800 level, and that's probably due to the fact that we got the other fish to fry right now. We got the dollar, which has softened a bit. We got some geopolitical concerns, and we got inflation, which is still running pretty hot. So far gold has managed to put up a defense. But yes, let's break it into pieces, John. But let's start off just with the on slide 5. Not that I think it's going to have much of it in terms of market impact, but it's going to have it will be mentioned in the media, and that's why you just need to be aware. Every year between January 7 and January, well, this year between January 7 and 13, the two major commodity index funds, Bloomberg Commodity Index and S&P GSCI, they reweight their rebalance their weightings, and that sometimes leads to some major position adjustments. Mm-hmm. And that's also happening this year. Interestingly enough, some of them actually go against each other, so the overall impact should be limited. But we have to remember that these two indices are being tracked by probably, I'll say, at least $200 billion worth of investment. So it is creating a lot of activity in the futures market over the next few days here. But generally, I think the impact is going to be limited. Then on the oil front and the Omicron, there's no doubt that the market is keeping a close eye on China right now, again, because they have this zero tolerance policy, which could lead to lockdowns, even though the health impact is limited. So we're keeping a close eye on that, but a very strong start last week. You could argue that we may see some we may enter a period of consolidation here, because the two main drivers behind the rally last week, that was Kazakhstan and Libya, and both of these supplies from both of these seems to be improving.
All right. Yeah. On the zero tolerance front from China, very interesting to, as well. Once it's clear if they're only having Omicron cases and if the experience is that this is mild, you would have to imagine they declare that their approach was victorious because they didn't tolerate the previous strains and they can open up the economy. That certainly would be the hope for a growth cycle that really kicks in fully and globally. And we are seeing surging case counts in Asia because of the nature of that Omicron contagiousness. Rewinding a bit, so let's go back just a bit on the actual, you already brought it into the conversation over the rise in yields. And just for perspective on that, you can see on slide three that really the really novel thing that's been happening this year and really since the start of the year is that lifting of the entire yield curve. So, and there's certainly no exception to that. On the Friday response to the jobs report in the U.S., you can see the two-year lifted all the way, we're all around 90 basis points now, and the 10-year up again above that 2021 high of around 1.75%, opens up considerable chart area, and we'll see where that goes. And then importantly, the yield curve actually steepening a bit. So that's suggesting that even with the Fed, the drumbeat of sort of Fed hawkishness there, that we're actually managing to see the yield curve steepen. So that's a very key part of the perspective here. Some of that brought around by the idea that they might do quantitative tightening. But as long as U.S. yields, long yields are going higher, it has an important knock-on effects across asset classes. And to me, in FX, it was a very quiet day, you know, ironically so, on Friday, because you had what looks like a very strong fundamental support for the U.S. dollar. And we see the dollar actually weakening in the case of the Eurodollar. Eurodollar closing on the sort of on the highs for the day, despite that lift in U.S. yields. I think a very interesting indicator that this dollar is having a hard time rallying and what should be almost a perfect storm of support. Then again, we sort of backfilled into the range. So we're really just left clueless on FX here in terms of the dollar direction. We're seeing elsewhere that sterling strength, and then we're getting support for the oil currencies, somewhat less support for the ruble as we have some key geopolitical questions hanging over this market this week. But let's clear out the commodity space. Uli, I know you have some thoughts on, still have this crazy La Nina weather pattern that's creating havoc in South America. And I guess that's what's behind your comments there on slide seven.
Indeed. I've just highlighted coffee and soybeans, both really depending on weather developments in Brazil. And the weather has been playing havoc again this year. Most recently, it's been very hot and dry weather, which has impacted the soybean crop, which is about to be harvested. So in some regions, the soybean yield is expected to drop in half. So we've seen beans back above $14 a bushel. Approaching that 50% retracement of the sell-off that we had since the peak back in May last year, but also the coffee market. A period of consolidation here after rallying to the highest level in almost 10 years. After that consolidation, we're now seeing the market starting to pick up again. And it is basically the outlook for a very, very tight market in 22 and potentially also in 23 that's underpinning prices. Just look at the available stocks at certified warehouses. They are still coming down. At the same time, we have the only slight negative impact potentially could be quite an elevated speculative long, but as long as we have this momentum here, then they will obviously stay in the market.
All right, let's look as well as we have earnings season finally coming into view here. Certainly heating up this week. You've got a number of red names on your earnings overview there on slide nine, Peter.
Yeah, we do have to try to pull out interesting things, although the calendar is still pretty light. You can see here on slide nine, we have the first bunch of Q4 earnings releases coming in from Yaskawa Electric, which is a Japanese company with selling electric motors, automation machinery, etc. And they have a pretty big footprint in China. So I think this is probably the first publicly listed company to show or give a peek into what is the demand picture from Chinese the Chinese industrial sector. And the market seems pretty confident that the numbers are okay for the business. But in any case, I think it's going to be interesting because of everything. I mean, it has been a horrible start to the year for China, especially in their real estate sector and the credit market. So to what extent it's impacting overall economic activity, I think we could get these clues from Yaskawa Electric. And then we have Acciona Energias, which also will report tomorrow. It's the first one in the renewable energy industry in Europe. And given the weakness we have seen in the green transformation basket, I think this is a really key one to watch because things are really bleeding hard, Vestas and Ørsted and some of the other big names. So here we can get some clues. And also because of the unfolding energy crisis, to what extent is it impacting demand? We know prices are surging for solar panels, but also wind turbines. To what extent is that impacting the pipeline? We know the Vestas has been really impacted last year on their pipeline. And then on Thursday, Fast Retailing, it's the H&M of Japan, good gauge on consumer sentiment. Delta Airlines on the Omicron reopening, path to renormalization, of course. And then Christian Hansen is a Danish company within the ingredients and flavors used for in the food industry. Very boring company, but a very interesting stock because it has delivering very high return on equity and capital. And then on Friday is the big one. It's really the first real impact day on the earnings season with JP Morgan Chase, which is a full-fledged commercial investment bank asset manager as well. The key one to follow. Wells Fargo, more pure exposure to the commercial and consumer banking businesses in the US, and then BlackRock for itself in the asset management industry. Typically tends to do better than expectations. Probably they will do so again for probably the 20th consecutive quarter. And then Citigroup, we always highlight Citigroup because Citigroup has a larger footprint in the emerging market countries and economies. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and with a very strong dollar and what's going on with the economy, I think Citigroup could show us a little bit what's potentially happening in that part of the world.
Yeah, really interested to see on Wells Fargo as well, the scale of Main Street lending, what yes. they're seeing in terms of demand for lending. But
is it finally picking up?
Yeah, I would imagine maybe that's not happening until post-Omicron, but let's see. Okay, macro calendar, and we really need to keep our eye on the geopolitical front this week. I can't emphasize enough, this is very critical stuff, especially for short-term effects if something goes wrong here. And I'm, of course, talking about the situation over Ukraine, where Russia has marked out some aggressive red lines, and some of the terms that they're requiring just look totally unacceptable from the U.S. and NATO side. How does this resolve? I'm getting increasingly pessimistic about this, but I don't want to get too specific, as I really don't know. It's an important issue, and I think underappreciated by this market. There's not much, if any, of a geopolitical discount besides things like the Russian ruble and potentially a slight premium on oil. From that source. So give that a thought or two. We also have nomination hearings this week. I did not have this in the calendar on Friday, but these will be interesting, and some of this will be political grandstanding, but especially maybe on Thursday, whether Tuesday, by the way, so tomorrow being the nomination hearing for Powell, I don't think there's any big hurdle for him to be renominated and start his second term next month. But more on Vice Chair Brainard, how much do the Republicans put up a fight against her? I think that'll be quite interesting to see. And then we have the global inflation benchmark in the form of the December PPI out of China on Wednesday. And you can see all the various Russia talks with NATO on Wednesday, besides the U.S. officials and Russian officials scheduled to talk today. And then other talks happening as well on Thursday. And then on the U.S. front, we get the December retail sales. Interesting to see if that disappoints because of some shift in holiday spending when people were afraid that some things would not be available because of all those shipping disruptions and supply chain disruptions. There's some potential around that. And then on Wednesday, before we get to the Friday U.S. retail sales, we have the December CPI on Wednesday. Don't have the expected number in front of me, but looking for these new highs for the cycle. Finally, just note the weekly close on the NASDAQ 100. If you look at the appendix, slide 11, a bit of an impressive evening star formation if you're into candlestick analysis. So it is really, I think, technically a critical week for sort of a stand or fall for something like the NASDAQ 100. Interesting to watch that as it tracks this week. Okay, that is a wrap for today. We will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.